All right, so Hare Krishna, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Sri Sri Radhakula Chandi's Srimad Bhagavatam class. Today is Thursday, and we are November 9th. And today we're going to be reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto, chapter number 19. We're beginning with verse number 9. This chapter is entitled, The Perfection of Spiritual Knowledge. Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bhavani Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bhavani Gopi Jana Vallabha Jaya Giri Vadadadi Jaya Giri Vadapavapadi Yasodana Dana Praja Janana Yasodana Dana Praja Janana Jaya Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Kunjabi Hirani Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Kunjabi Hirani Jai Radha Madhava Jaya Kunjabi Bhavani Okay, so good morning again, and here we are. We'll begin here with text number 9. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Tapatrayena bihatasya. Om tapatrayena bihatasya gopre shanta pamanasya bhavandavanisha. Pashyami nanyach charanam tavangrihi dvandva tapatrit amrita bivarsha. Translation. My dear Lord, for one who has been tormented, for one who is being tormented on the terrible path of birth and death, and is constantly overwhelmed by the threefold miseries, I do not see any possible shelter other than your lotus feet, which are just like a refreshing umbrella that pours down showers of delicious nectar. Purport. Lord Krishna, recognizing Uddhava's highly intellectual nature, has repeatedly recommended to him that one should achieve perfection by cultivation of transcendental knowledge. But the Lord has also clearly demonstrated that such knowledge must bring one to the point of loving devotional service to Him, for otherwise it is useless. In this verse, Sri Uddhava corroborates Lord Krishna's statements that actual happiness is obtained by surrendering to his lotus feet. When the incarnation of Godhead Prithu Maharaj was crowned, the demigod Vayu presented him with an umbrella that constantly sprayed fine particles of water. The Lord's two lotus feet are similarly compared here to a wonderful umbrella that produces a constant shower of delicious nectar, the bliss of Krishna consciousness. Normally, speculative analytical knowledge terminates in an impersonal conception of the absolute truth. But the so-called bliss of merging into impersonal spiritual existence can never be compared to the bliss of Krishna consciousness. As stated here by Sri Uddhava, Krishna consciousness thus automatically constitutes perfect knowledge, since Lord Krishna is the ultimate shelter of all living entities. The words abhihatasya and abhivarats are significant in this verse. Abhiha tasya indicates one who is being defeated on all sides by the onslaught of material nature, whereas abhivarshat indicates a downpour of nectar that eliminates all the problems of material existence. By our intelligence, we should look beyond the dull material body and nonsensical material mind to observe the unlimited shower of blissful nectar coming from the two lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Then our real good fortune will begin. Om Ganata Manandasya Granjana Shalakaya Chakshusan Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadandikam. So we're talking this morning about Krishna being a unlimited ocean of transcendental nectar. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami describes Krishna as Anandam Buddhivardhanam, that he is an unlimited ocean of transcendental bliss. Once my spiritual master, he was asked by one of my godbrothers, Brahma Samhita Prabhu, is it true in Krishna consciousness that if there's no pain, there's no gain? Like so many of us, you know, we know throughout our lives that if there's no pain, there's no gain, right? Get up, get to work, you know, struggle and make a good living, then you're successful. So is that true with Krishna consciousness? And his response was no. His response was, if there's no bliss, there's no gain. Yes, we can be forced to, you know, do things. It's like, you know, everybody's forced to go out and get a job and work for somebody and be told what to do all day and get paid as little as possible. We're being forced to live like that, you see. But it's not like anyone really likes it. In a Gallup poll, 5,000 people were surveyed as to whether they liked their occupation or not. And over 4,000 people said that they didn't like their job. The remainder, they were divided pretty much in half. Half the people said that they had no comment, and the other half said probably they were afraid they'd lose their job. And then the other half said that they did like their job. And my Guru Maharaj, he said, either they were lying or they were all crazy. That's a joke, of course. But the point that I'm making is that struggling for existence is not in the dictionary definition of happiness. Right? Even old Noel Webster knew that struggling for existence is not happiness. Because it's against the nature of the soul. It's against the nature of the soul to be enslaved. It's not against the nature of the soul to work hard for Krishna, but it is against the nature of the soul to be enslaved. And as it's pointed out in the purport here, our enslavement begins with our contemplation of the dictation of our senses and the sense objects. As soon as you see that new car, as soon as you see that big house, as soon as you see that beautiful woman, you're becoming a slave to your senses. In Sanskrit, the terms are Godas. There's two terms, Godas and Goswami. So Godas is somebody who's giving in to the dictations of their senses and their mind. Presently, we're being influenced tremendously by corporate psychology and also an atheistic form of an atheistic paradigm, an atheistic worldview. Our leading educational institutions, you can Google, for example, Nobel laureates stating things like
3.2 billion years ago, dead inorganic matter went through a sudden chance explosion and converted into organic matter, and life began as we know it.
This is a common paradigm that's being taught in all of our major educational institutions around the world. And they base that on the misconception that everything comes from nothing. Do you believe that, Rupa Nungapuru? That everything comes from nothing? See, most kids that go into college, they don't actually have the opportunity or the training to even understand who they are. So basically what they come to grips with after a certain period of time is that, well, whoever I am or whatever I am, I could sure use some money. And the result of that is they open themselves up to a tremendous amount of exploitation. Oh, you need money. Oh, okay. Well, here, great. We've got this great master's program for you. We're not going to guarantee you that you're going to get a job after you graduate, but we do have a great master's program. It'll cost you about $200,000 with room and board and food, and you probably end up with a $100,000 debt. But it's a great program to make money. Basically, what's happening today, now it may have been different when you were going into college, Rupa Nungapuru, but basically today, nowadays, most students are confronted with a tremendous amount of debt. And what they're being told is that to accumulate a $100,000 debt is the best thing that you can do before you begin your career. And it's pretty shocking, actually. I mean, of course, it's packaged with, you know, wonderful, universities and different types of great professors who happen to be, you know, polished public speakers. But the reality of the fact is that nobody really cares about these kids. These kids, if they don't pay their tuition, they're on a fast track right out of that college. Nobody really cares if they've graduated or not. Of course, you know, you could say, well, my professors, they love me and everything, but that's just superficial. If you don't pay those professors, they'll be the first one to have you expelled and railroaded out of that college. Just like not too long ago, I was at the University of California in Santa Cruz. It's one of the wealthiest communities in this country. The university is built in this amazing section of the great redwood forest. Beautiful, huge redwoods are covering, you know, they're shading this university campus. And when I was there, the university students, they were rioting against the administration, and they had these huge signs that said, "Raise hell, not tuitions." So I asked the students, what's all the upheaval about? And they said that in 1 year, they've had a 45% increase in their tuitions. So I don't know how, you know, these universities expect these students to keep up pace. You know, everybody talks about how advanced, you know, everything's become, how we've improved, how, you know, there's more intellectual capacity, there's more technology. But what's shocking to me is that the same home that my parents bought for $35,000 when I was a kid, like 45 years ago, right, 50 years ago, is now $650,000. And that's called advancement? To me, if it was real advancement, the house would be cheaper, right? So now young people in Dallas, Texas, you know, once they decide to, you know, have a family, they're being confronted with decisions. Well, should I buy a $350,000 home or a $650,000 home? I had a conversation with a young couple about that. So I was saying, don't bite off more house than you can chew. And also, as you, if you speak to Mishra Bhagavan Prabhu or Rupa Nuga Prabhu, you'll find out how quickly your kids grow up, right? Your kids were here. How old are they now, Mishra Prabhu, now? I saw your son in here with his new wife. They're all in their 30s, right? So you can imagine, right, buying a six-bedroom home for $600,000, and then suddenly all your kids move out. What are you going to do? Mr. Hari Agarwal had a conversation with me. He did that. He bought a beautiful two-floor home, five-bedroom home in Rockwall, Texas. And what's happened now is kids are all moved out. They live in San Francisco. And what's happened now is the foundation is broke. It's broken on the home. And the house is now collapsing, and he's getting these huge cracks inside the house, even to the point where the windows are popping out of the frames. I didn't know something like that could happen, but he's telling me that his house, that's what's happening to his home right now. And he wants to sell it because him and his wife, they're in their 70s, mid-70s, and they want to retire, and he doesn't have the capacity or the money to rebuild his home. And he just doesn't know what to do. And no one will buy the house with the broken foundation. The last quote he got was $45,000 to repair the foundation of his house. And he's just beside himself in anxiety as to what to do. Dhananjaya Prabhu, he talked to me not too long ago about his mother. So his mother and father, they worked their entire life and bought a beautiful home and property, about 3 acres of property in North Dallas here. And what he told me after his father died, the house was completely paid for. You see, they'd worked their entire life to pay off this home. But what happened after his father's death over the last 10 years is that the city of Dallas has raised the property tax continually again and again and again. Till now, for her to live in that house, she has to pay $25,000 in property tax each year, and she can't afford it. And literally, the city administration is forcing this woman out of her home that she worked her entire life to buy. And this is just a handful of, you know, examples. If you study psychiatry or psychology, for example, my wife, she's supervisor for a large psychiatric hospital. And she has a number of her staff come here, leading doctors in the city of Dallas who are psychiatrists. And it's just shocking when you tabulate the amount of mental illness that is present in our society today. I mean, we're talking about people who are violently insane. And not only adults, or not even old retired people, senior citizens who have become senile and who are violent. But you're also talking about children. Hundreds and hundreds of reported cases that are brought into the hospital of children that are as young as 5 and 6 years old. My Guru Maharaj, once he read me an article about, which was, exposition on children's liberation. According to some leading psychiatrists in America, now you can Google this and read it, you'll see leading psychiatrists that are describing that children, in the name of becoming liberated, should engage in oral sex with their parents at the earliest possible age. and should be allowed to have sex with their peers as early as 5 and 6 years of age, so that by the time they reach their 20s, they can actually experience unadulterated pleasure. And these are leading educational, you know, professionals. I know, these things are disgusting. Rupa Nuga Prabhu just walked out of here disgusted hearing that. You see? They even propagate things online and show films and all of the other insanity that's going on. So now what we're propagating here is the bliss, the nectar of Krishna consciousness. That Krishna and this practice of Krishna consciousness can give someone complete satisfaction. I'm not a perfect example of this. I know that. But Srila Prabhupada is. Srila Prabhupada showed an example of somebody who was completely satisfied in body, mind, and words. If you go and see that new film, the Hare Krishna film, did you see that, Mishra Prabhu? What did you think of the film? Very nice, what? It's very nice to hear Srila Prabhupada tell his own story. Yeah, actually, you know, some devotees, they may not accept these later volumes of the Srimad Bhagavatam or the books that are being written by Prabhupada's disciples on an equal level with Srila Prabhupada's books, and there are reasons for that. But one of the things that I find that is just so enlivening to me is that the very point that you just made, that you, these, the disciples of Srila Prabhupada speak about Prabhupada as an example of pure devotional service. And that's amazing. Nowhere else in Prabhupada's books do you find Prabhupada speaking about himself so openly. He may allude to things indirectly, saying about some points about the spiritual master or about the acharya, but in these volumes that we're reading now, we see, you know, direct reaccounts of Prabhupada's personality and life. And it's very enlivening. Very enlivening. Spiritually. To have a living example. You see? I mean, so many times, you know, you sit in a class and you're being told how to live your life. Right? And for most people, nobody really likes that. Nobody really likes being told what to do. That's kind of the American, you know, claim to independence, right? Nobody can tell me what to do. Who are you to tell me what to do? Right? We've heard that again and again. We might even think like that sometimes. You see? But what's so beautiful about Srila Prabhupada's teachings and Prabhupada's example, and any, you know, advanced devotee's example, is that they are able to show you a living example of what they're describing. Prabhupada's not just talking about loving Krishna. Prabhupada is practically in every way showing how to love and appreciate Krishna. And Prabhupada's made this process so accessible, so easy to embrace. Prabhupada has, what has he done? He's given us chanting, dancing, and feasting. That's the main part of our movement. And then you get a little bit of philosophy about, you know, the glories of Krishna and what it means to be spiritual, right? You get some beautiful stories about Krishna and Krishna's pastimes, and you get a little bit of philosophy trying to help you along to make the right decisions in your life. I mean, what could be more sublime? Anybody can do that. And really, I mean, sincerely embrace it within their heart. And that makes Prabhupada and Krishna so lovable. You know, if somebody sits up here and tells you a bunch of things that you know you're not going to be able to do, you're just going to feel frustrated. Once, there's a really interesting anecdote. One young man, Prabhupada was asking him, why don't you join our society? So he told Prabhupada that, Srila Prabhupada, I'm sorry, I cannot join because in your society you do not allow us to have sex. You don't allow sex. And Prabhupada's response to him was, in Krishna consciousness, you can have sex to such an extent that you can have God for your child. You know, something I experienced quite a bit, and that is this tendency to vilify Krishna or to vilify some other devotee or some government leader or something, you know, a family member, you see, and blame them for the problems that I'm having. You know, why am I struggling so much? Krishna, you're supposed to be so kind. Why don't you take care of me? Why do I have to struggle in this way? I think it's quite common for people to go through that type of, you know, mentality. You know, oh, the devotees, you know, they're so mean to me. They walk out of my class. You see? So, but the point that I'm trying to make is that it has nothing at all to do with Krishna or the other individuals. I'm suffering and enjoying the results of my own decisions and behavior. And that's a very, you know, wonderful understanding of life, because no longer do you become hostile. No longer do you become influenced by honor and dishonor. Honor and dishonor are being in the material world, are simply being directed towards this material body. And we're not these bodies. It's like somebody walking up to you, you know, and looking at an automobile that's parked nearby you and describing what they like and they don't like about that car. It doesn't really have anything to do with you. Prabhupada, he continually gives that verse, Yantra Rudrani Maya, that this material body is simply a machine. So our bodies have so much conditioning. And our bodies are a product of the modes of material nature. I was reading this really interesting section of the Bhagavad Gita last night from chapter 13. And in chapter 13, Srila Prabhupada, he writes that there's a lot of confusion about this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Because in this chapter, Krishna, he describes the 24 elements of the material creation, and the 25th element being the soul, and the 26th element being the super soul. But what Prabhupada points out is that most people accept this chapter as a branch of Sankhya philosophy, as an analytical description of the material world. But Prabhupada actually, what he goes on to further explain is that the actual purpose of this chapter is to get free from the elements of the material energy by practicing devotional service. We're not just here to analyze the material world. That's what's being described in this verse today. You see, it says, my dear Lord, for one who is being tormented on the terrible path of birth and death and is constantly overwhelmed by the threefold miseries, I do not see any possible shelter other than your two lotus feet, which are like a refreshing umbrella that pours down showers of delicious nectar. Now, we're all being tormented by the material energy. So, if you simply evaluate the elements that you're being tormented by, that doesn't free you from that torment. It doesn't free you from that difficulty. But most people are accepting that as knowledge. And Krishna says here that actually that's ignorance. Harbal. Look, I'll just read a little bit to you. It's pretty amazing. So here he says, humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from the entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization and the philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. People are, you know, spending years and years of their life and hundreds and thousands and even millions and billions of dollars just analyzing these material elements. Here Krishna is saying that's an act in the mode of ignorance. It cannot free us from the miseries of life. Here in the Purport, Prabhupada says, this process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements, as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of the 24 elements. And the process of knowledge, as described here, is the means to get out of it. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse, Mayichanena Yogena Bhaktir Avibhicharani. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So if one does not approach, or one is not able to approach, the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. So without devotional service, we're basically wasting our time. Prabhupada points out that generally nonviolence is taken to mean not killing something or killing someone. Just like I got this amazing message on Facebook this morning with this picture, this really beautiful calf. And the quote on there is that the ultimate question is why are there just a small group of people telling the masses to stop enslaving and murdering animals. So generally when we think about nonviolence, you know, we're considering it in terms of killing. But people in general are trapped by ignorance in this material conception of life. And they perpetually suffer material pains. So unless one elevates people to spiritual knowledge, one is practicing violence. One should try his best to distribute real knowledge to people so that they may become enlightened and leave this material entanglement That is nonviolence. So, you know, the point I was making earlier about universities and university professors, you see, someone might say, well, I was in his class and he was so nice. He was such a gentleman. He was always opening the door for me whenever I came to class. If I came in a few minutes late, he didn't mark me off. You see, he's such a nice professor. But the point the prophet's making here, that unless that professor is teaching you the process of devotional service, they're actually perpetrating violence against you. Yes, you can go to a class and have a professor there, and he may be very cordial, he may have a very high level of rhetoric, he may be very polite, but if he's describing you that everything in this world comes from nothing, and that God is simply hanging on to the edge of human society by his fingertips and is soon going to be kicked off into the abyss of meaninglessness, then you have to begin to question, what is his actual purpose? And he may say it to you in the most polite way, more polite than anyone's ever said it to you, anything to you before in your life. But if you suck that up, you're just an emotional idiot. Does that make sense? This war, the battle of Kurukshetra, was fought over this very reason. Prophet's saying everything that's going on in the name of knowledge that's materialistic is simply violence against the soul. So I hope you guys have a great day. I'm going to stop here. It's really nice to have you here. I hope you have a wonderful day today. I want to thank Mataji again for that amazing cake on Vrinda Devi's appearance. Wedding festival. That was really, really nice, Mataji. Yeah. They're thinking about opening, the administration here is thinking about opening a bakery here. I would highly recommend your cake being part of that. So I don't know if you have any questions or comments, anybody. Otherwise, I'm going to stop here. Okay, then. Thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful day in Krishna consciousness. I mean, I could go on here. I mean, really, in our verse today, there's two things that I think really stood out to me. One is in the verse, there is an umbrella being described, which is like Krishna, the nectar of Krishna's lotus feet is like a refreshing umbrella that pours down showers of delicious nectar. Normally, when you think about an umbrella, you're thinking about something that's protecting you from a downpour, protecting you from a rain shower. But this umbrella is being described as within the umbrella, you become showered by nectar. So do you know an example of that? Here, Hridayananda Maharaj points out that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a description of such an umbrella that was given to Lord Indra here. And that umbrella from within it would constantly shower a mist of soothing droplets of water. So umbrellas aren't just used to protect us from rain, but like you'll see in Asia, especially in Asian women, they'll use an umbrella to protect themselves from the sun. And the umbrella here, which was given to Lord Indra, not only did it protect the inhabitants beneath that umbrella from the sunlight, but it misted them with a wonderful water shower, which was cooling and refreshing in the heart, in the hot, harsh, you know, rays of the sun. It's described actually, there's a beautiful description. Since we're talking about the nectar of Krishna's pastimes, there's a wonderful description given by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And it's also commented on by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And Prabhupada, he translated six different bhajans describing the pastime of Radha and Krishna on their swing festival, during their swing festival. They're beautiful. One of them is actually written in the Brijabasi language, which is very, very sweet. So the description is that Krishna, there are two different types of swings but that Krishna, Radha and Krishna swing upon. But the main swing that's described, it's called the Padma Hindola. Have you heard about that? Do you know what a hindola is? So the hindola is unique because the seats of a hindola, they face each other. Like when I grew up, my grandmother had one of these at her home. So the swing, it had two bench seats on it, right? Nice benches. They were kind of like love seats, maybe a little bit wider. Three people could really sit on it if they wanted to. And then it has a footrest. And the swings, you've probably seen this, right, Mr.? The swings have a bar that comes down to that footrest. And then there's posts that go up to a frame that's above your head. And on the frame, there's a canopy. So you can sit inside this swing and you're sheltered from the sun. And then when you press on the footrest, the two seats move. So like it'll go this way and this way. Right? With the seats facing each other? Mm-hmm. So Radha and Krishna have this particular hindola. We were talking about Vrinda Devi's wedding. So it's described that Vrinda Devi, she has a group of girlfriends. They're called Van Devis. They live in the forests of Vrindavan. And they're all a little bit younger than Radha and Krishna. So they're not really like Krishna's age. So they're not like Krishna's girlfriends or contemporaries with Radharani. They're the maid servants of Radharani. And what's really unique about them is that they are the only devotees that can actually witness Radha and Krishna's intimate loving pastimes. That's one of the reasons that we worship Vrinda Devi, because she is the main manjari or maidservant of Srimati Radharani. You see? So what's unique about those girls is they don't compete with Radharani for a loving relationship with Krishna. They simply serve Radharani and try to bring Radharani to serve and love Krishna. So they can be with Radha and Krishna. But the other girls who are Radharani's contemporaries, they're not allowed to be with Radha and Krishna. You see? So Vrinda Devi and her friends, they created this beautiful swing. And the way the swing is described, there are two velvet-covered seats, beautiful thrones, that are compared to be like the petals of a lotus. The entire swing is described to look just like a large lotus. If you want to see a picture of something like this, I don't know if they still have it, but years ago in Gita Nagari, Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa-san was made like that. That the back like was just made like a petal of a lotus, and then the armrests were like continual petals, and it looked like Prabhupada is sitting in a lotus flower. You know? Sometimes I've seen, there's one amazing devotee. She's a Odissi dancer. Her name's Krishna Vaini. And I saw her perform, and she had a group of girls. She's a world-class dancer. And she had a group of Odissi dancers pose around her and with their hands like the petals of a lotus. And she played like she was Krishna, and she looked like Krishna standing in a lotus flower. And in that particular dance piece, she used Srila Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion, and she danced and did all the different 64 qualities of Krishna that makes Krishna so attractive and lovable. It was an astonishing dance piece. But anyway, so this this Padma Hindola, Padma meaning lotus, Hindola meaning swing with the seats facing. So there are two velveteen seats. Their backrests are shaped like the petals of a lotus. And then those seats have a footrest, like I was describing, right? And then around them are eight other petal-like thrones. And the eight primary gopis sit in those thrones, like Lalita, Vishaka, Sudevi, Rangadevi, Chitraleka, Induleka, Tungavidya, and Champakalata. Right? These are the main deities of our movement, right? In Mayapur, we have Radha Madhava and the Ashtashakis. Now, each one of those shakis, like Lalita, they have manjaris, these younger girls that serve them and assist them in their service to Radha and Krishna. Like, we come in the line of Lalita, right? And we're followers of Rupa Goswami. So Rupa Goswami, in his eternal form, he is Rupa Manjari. So the two main, the line that we're following is the line of Rupa Manjari in the camp of Lalita and their service to Radha and Krishna. That's our disciplic succession's line. So it's described that Lalita and the eight gopis, the seven other primary gopis are sitting there, and then around them are 16 more petal-like thrones, and then two of each one of these gopis, Manjaris, sit behind them. And as the swing moves, each one of these gopis is offering different types of service to Radha and Krishna. Now, so not only is the swing made of all these petal-like lotus thrones, right? Satin thrones, but it's tied to two huge kadamba trees. You've seen kadamba trees in India? So like in Mayapur, there are these huge kadamba trees that line the walkway going to Prabhupada's Samadhi from the temple today. And if you go there during the rainy season, like the end of July, the kadamba trees, they bloom, their flowers bloom at that time. And the kadamba flowers are very fragrant and they're very beautiful. They're like a kind of like a white snowball type. In America, when I grew up, we had these donuts called snowballs. And it's basically a donut that's jelly filled and then it's rolled in coconut. And then it's lightly accented with like pink food coloring. So, and kadamba flowers always remind me of these donuts, which were one of my favorite childhood sweets. They're called snowballs. But these flowers are very fragrant, so they make flower garlands with them. So these two huge trees, this Padma Hindola is tied to these trees with giant silk ropes that are braided with strands of pearls. And as the swing moves, the two branches that that it's tied to, so that they don't break, the two branches are supported by two large lapis lazuli pillars. So they have carved, you know, like these pillars here in our temple. So they carved two massive pillars, and these pillars were set up. And so you can imagine, right, the two branches like this with the swing. So when the swing moves, the branches will move up and down so that they don't break. The pillars support the branches. But the branches still move enough that the branches, because they're laden with these beautiful flowers, these kadamba flowers, they move up and down and they fan Radha and Krishna and they waft the entire area with the fragrance of the kadamba flowers. So the way this pastime is described is that Radha and Krishna, after dancing in the rasa dance, then they swim in the Jamuna and have water pastimes. So after that, they're dressed beautifully and they're just strolling through the forest. And Vrindadevi, she leads them to this particular area. You might have gone there if you've been. Have you been on Braj Mandal Parikram? If you go on Braj Mandal Parikram, you'll go to this place. It's called Tir Kadamba. It's the forest of kadamba trees. So when they arrive there, Vrindadevi has done this as a surprise. They see this beautiful swing. And Krishna becomes so excited. And he wants to swing on the swing with Srimati Radharani. But she plays hard to get, right? She says, why do you want me on that swing with you? Take Lalita. Take Vishakha. So normally, the gopis, they always take Radharani's side. So whatever she wants, they'll support her and they won't support Krishna. But in this particular pastime, they support Krishna. And so without even knowing, the gopis pick her up from behind and they carry her and put her on the swing. So Radharani's sitting on the swing. Krishna gets on. They're facing each other. And then all the gopis in a cappella, without any musical instruments, they start to sing this beautiful bhajan about Radha and Krishna's love. And they push this Padma Hindola. So the Padma Hindola moves, right, back and forth like this. And the gopis are singing, and the branches are waving, and the whole area is fragrant. So Krishna, with his sidelong glance, he indicates to the girls pushing that they should push higher and higher, right? So they start pushing harder, right? And Radharani becomes a little afraid because the swing's starting to go quite high. So when the swing would go high with Radharani facing Krishna, she would say, "Shyam, slow down." And when the swing would go past the gopis pushing, they would say to Radharani, "Shyama, hold on." So the swing's going like that. "Shyam, slow down. Shyama, hold on." So it's going higher and higher. And then finally it goes so high that one of the branches from the Kadamba tree, it touches Radharani's back. And so when you're a little afraid, right, and someone touches you, you panic. So she panics and she lets go, and then she falls right into Krishna's arms. That was his plan. And then all the gopis make that sound. Do you know how to make that ulu sound? So they slow down the swing, you know, and all the gopis, you know, they're like, "Ooh, look at Radharani and Krishna," you know. So anyway, at that point, they stop the swing, and then they bring all these different sweets that they had packed and all these different fresh forest fruits from, you know, from Vrindavan, and milk sweets and other snacks. And they have this wonderful picnic on the swing, all the gopis and Radha and Krishna. Nectar, they bring some nectar drink. They're so clever. You know, they cook these things and they bring everything secretly, and they even have like these little cottages. Pushpa, what's a cottage called in Hindi? What do you call a cottage? You know, like a little house that's made out of bamboo and things? A kunja? Kunja also means like a forest, like a flowering area. A kuta? Kutia. Yeah, pushpa kutia. So, and they store these things there, like these nectar drinks and sweets and everything. And then when Radha and Krishna is brought to that particular place, they bring everything out and they have these parties. And it's beautifully described. The forest of Vrindavan actually has 8 main areas. And in those areas, each forest has unique qualities. Like Lalita, her forest is dominated by the color white. All the trees bloom with white flowers, all the flowering vines. Like you can imagine, right? The forest is filled with, good morning, Harival, Rachel. So the forests are filled with jasmine flowers, right? And when Radha and Krishna go there, they go on the full moon night, which is dominated by white, and then they dress in white so that they won't be seen when they're going in the forest. So there's 8 different primary forests, and then there's 16 secondary forests. And each one of these forests is unique. It has unique qualities, unique flowers, unique fruits, unique seasons. Like Lalita's forest, it's dominated by fall. I think by Kartik is dominated. And it's called Lalita Ananda Kund. Lalita Ananda Kunj. You know, but like some of the forests, like Radha and Krishna can go from forest to forest and experience all 6 seasons, you know, simultaneously. So anyway, so they stop and they have this wonderful picnic. And then they want to swing again. So this time, the 8 gopis and the 16 manjaris get on the swing, and they start moving the swing again. So it's described that when this huge swing, Radha and Krishna swing we're talking about, it's a hindola, it's a 16, it's a multi-petaled lotus with velvet thrones that are shaped like the petals of a lotus, and the main 2 thrones face each other. So Radha and Krishna face each other. And then there's 8 petals around them for the 8 gopi thrones, and then 16 petals around them for the manjaris, the maidservants of the gopis. So there were, all the girls are on there with Krishna, and they're singing and they're pushing them. So it's described that because of this exciting pastime, Radha and Krishna were perspiring a little bit. And it's described that the pearls of sweat coming from Radha and Krishna, I'm sorry, the droplets of sweat were just like pearls adorning them. And so in Vrindavan, in Goloka Vrindavan, everything And everyone is, they're all pure devotees of Krishna. So the clouds are also conscious. Everything in the spiritual world is spiritual. Everything is conscious. Right? Krishna has his pet cows, he has his pet, but everything is conscious, his flute, everything is conscious. So the clouds, seeing Radha and Krishna perspiring, and this is the beginning of the rainy season when they perform Julan Yatra, right? Just before Jamastami, we do it each year. So the clouds begin to mist down a very fine shower of rain just to cool them, like it's being described in this verse here about this umbrella, this mystical umbrella of Lord Indra. So at that time also the demigods and demigoddesses came in their flower airplanes and swan airplanes, and they were hovering in the sky above Radha and Krishna. And when they, to see the beauty of these pastimes, like these things are unparalleled in love and beauty. There's nothing like this. You know, it's better than any romance movie you could watch. So the demigods and demigoddesses, they begin to shower Radha and Krishna with the flower petals of these parijata trees from heaven. And what's really unique is the fragrance of these parijata flowers is so wonderful that the heavenly swans from these higher planets, they follow that fragrance. And so the entire area becomes filled with all these denizens of heaven and like divine swans that are like, look as if their bodies are made from gold, and all these other things are taking place. So when they shower these flower petals, the flower petals are oozing with the nectar of these flowers, with the, what do you call that inside a flower? It's like a honey. It's honey, right? Pollen and honey. Well, two things happen, three things happen. The girls themselves, they go through the forest before the swing festival and they collect the pollen of all the different lotuses. So according to this particular scripture, there's eight different types of lotuses. Each one of them produces a unique type of pollen. One flower produces a pollen that's saffron color. One flower produces a pollen that's red. One flower produces a pollen that's pink. And each one has a unique fragrance. So as they start pushing the swing and all the girls are rendering different service, they're giving Radha and Krishna pan to eat, they're fanning Krishna, they're doing different things for him, offering different types of jewelry and all snacks, and they're singing for him. So the gopis, it becomes like a type of a holy festival, and as Radha and Krishna go past, they shower them with the pollen from these lotuses. That's the original, you know, color, festival of colors. Right? It's done with the pollen of lotuses. So when they shower this pollen and the flower petals are falling with the honey and the light misting rain is created, it creates a type of nectar that's being described here in this verse, that Radha and Krishna's pastimes are like a shower of nectar. So this nectar, it bathes Radha and Krishna. It's extremely fragrant. But what happens is their clothing becomes dampened by it so that you can see all their beautiful features. Because their bodies are millions upon millions of times more beautiful than any type of jewelry or any type of clothing. It's described that when Krishna and Radha and Krishna wear jewelry, the jewelry doesn't enhance their beauty. Their beauty extreme, you know, it increases the beauty of the jewelry. They are so incredibly gorgeous to see. It's described that the gopis, they were cursing Lord Brahma for creating their eyes with the fault that they would blink, because even for that millisecond, they considered it to be the greatest form of suffering to be with Radha and Krishna and have to blink when you're seeing their darshan. So we can hardly imagine that, right? But that's the description, how beautiful they are. Srila Prabhupada gives this example that when, even though Radharani's love for Krishna is unparalleled, it's millions and millions of times beyond anything that we've ever experienced. Her love, her kindness, her beauty. So, but when she comes to Krishna, even though Krishna is that supreme original personality of Godhead, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchitananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Sarvakarana Karanam. Even though he is that source of all beauty, all knowledge, his qualities are increasing at every moment. But even though he's the source of everything, when he sees Radharani's love and her beauty and her happiness serving him, Krishna's beauty and his love and his happiness increase. And so when Radha and Krishna are together, anyone who witnesses their pastimes experiences an unlimited, ocean of transcendental nectar. Anyone who witnesses Radha and Krishna when they're together, their beauty, their happiness, and their love just increases unlimitedly. There's no comparison. Krishna, he says, how can I compare you to anything, Radharani? How can I compare your beauty to anything? He said, even the lotus is completely devoured by your beauty, because even though the lotus shines in the sunlight, at night it withers and closes. And even though the moon illuminates the gardens of the forest of Vrindavan, in the day it pales. But your beauty never pales and never wilts. You are beautiful on day and night. So then they're all swinging together and they're being showered by this abhishek of nectar coming from heaven and the clouds. And the gopis are singing a cappella without any musical instrument. So the clouds begin to rumble with the sound of mridanga drums, like a large drums. You know how thunder sounds? Especially in the beginning of the rainy season in India, you hear the clouds. They create this rumbling sound, but there's just a fine mist of rain, which is very, what should I say, satisfying after the hard, the heat of the summer. So the clouds begin to rumble in time with the gopis singing, like as if they're playing this drum, as if the clouds had become drums or drummers. So all of this is going on, and Lalita turns to Radharani and says, my dear Radhe, she says, why don't we have a rasa dance on this swing? And Radharani says, how is it possible? You know? And Lalita said to Radharani, she says, Radhe, this is Shyam. Wherever Shyama Sundar is, everything is possible. And so at that moment, the swing begins to expand. And it's described that there were millions and billions of gopis present there. One of the energies of Lord Balaram, it's called the Adara Shakti. And this Adara Shakti, Adara means to accommodate. Like a woman's womb is considered to be an expansion of the Adara Shakti, because she can accommodate a child within her. So Durga in the material world, the goddess Parvati, she is called an expansion of this Adara Shakti. But in its original form in Vrindavan, it's one of the main potencies of Lord Balaram, which facilitates or accommodates Radha and Krishna's pastimes. For example, if Krishna is in Nandagram with his mother and father, right? So at night, Krishna will chase all the servants out of his room and lock the doors, and then he has a secret passageway. And he'll escape from the palace of Nanda Maharaj. And he will go out. And then once he gets to the forest, right, to Vrindavan, then this Adara Shakti, it's described that Vrindavan is like a 1,000-petaled lotus. And the lotus will close. So Krishna, within a moment, he can go from Nandagram to the bank of Radhakund. And then the lotus will open. And Krishna can have pastimes there with millions and millions of gopis. So this swing was invested with the potency, this Adara Shakti, by Lord Balaram. Balaram, his main purpose is to facilitate Krishna's pastimes. So the girls start to get on to the swing. And it's described that millions upon millions of gopis, they were dancing on the swing. And it's described that when Radha and Krishna would dance, each one of them would move their bodies in such a way to make the swing move this way, and then this way, and then this way. And it's described that that rasa dance on this Padma Hindola, it went on for the entire day of Lord Brahma. How long is the day of Lord Brahma? Six. His whole life is 311,432,000,000 years. So if you divide that by 100, that would tell you the length of 1 year. So 311 trillion becomes 3,111,000,000. And then you divide that by 12 months and you get down to 300 million. And then you divide that by 30 days. So you're somewhere around 10 million years. They danced together in intimate love on the banks at Tirukadamba on this Padma Hindola. And then the pastime, when it ended, it was as if only a moment had passed. Krishna's pastimes are so mystical and unique. So when Brahma comes to Biharidas Thakur, he's halfway through his life. See, the examples that Prabhupada gives for of this Adara Shakti, you might remember the pastime. So Lord Brahma, right, he's the engineer of this universe, and he's considered to be the grandfather of all the demigods, and he has four heads, right? So he goes to Krishna's palace in Dwarka and asks to see Krishna. So the doorkeepers of Lord Krishna's palace, they tell him that we might have to check with Krishna. You know, one of my friends told the story like this, that Krishna was watching his favorite television show. Then Brahma asked, what's his favorite television show? And he said, the news. And he said, the news? And he said, yeah, because whatever they forecast for the weather, Krishna changes that, and he thinks it's so funny. No, it's just a joke, you guys. Anyway, so what happened was they go to Krishna, and Krishna sends them back and says to them, the gatekeepers say to Lord Brahma, Krishna is asking, which Brahma are you? And he said, which Brahma am I? I'm the Brahma of this universe. I was the engineer of the whole universe. I'm the Chaturmukhi Brahma, you know, the one in charge of like everything, you know? So then, you know, they go back to Krishna and then they call him in and he comes into the palace. And then Brahma says, I have this one question for you. Why did you ask which Brahma am I? And then Brahmas from all the different universes started to come. Some Brahmas with four heads, some with 10, some with 100, some with 1,000, some with 100,000, some with 1,000,000, some with 10,000,000. Depending on the size of the universe, they need more heads to have the intelligence to manage and to create everything necessary. So the way it's described, I'm giving you this example because the way it's described that each one of those Brahmas came into Krishna's palace and thought that they were in their universe and they were alone with Krishna. And only our Brahma was witnessing these countless numbers of Brahmas present simultaneously with Krishna. So this is an example of the Adara Shakti. It seems that Krishna is in his palace in Dwarka here in India, but actually his palace is within every universe simultaneously. Krishna can accommodate everything unlimitedly. So I want to give you one story and then I'll finish here. And it's described that once when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was traveling in Navadvipa, and it was during the time of the Snana Yatra when they bathe Jagannath, and Jagannath, the deities of Jagannath, like you see every year, they're put into solitude, right? So you don't see the deities for 2 weeks. It's described that, right? Jagannath became ill during the bathing, right? But actually, he goes and he stays in a private quarters with the goddess of fortune. So, during that time, it's described that Lord Chaitanya, his feelings of separation were so intense for Krishna, for Jagannath, right? That he finally, when the deities were brought back into the temple, he went there and it's described that he was burning in feelings of separation. And when he offered obeisances, he melted 6 inches into the solid marble floor. Now you can Google this and see this image of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's the exact image of his face, his arms, his whole body, literally melted into the solid marble floor. And His Holiness Jayapataka Maharaj told me that the family that owns this temple is prepared to give this section of the floor if we install that form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a temple, in an ISKCON temple, as the main deity of the temple. So if you're interested in worshiping, or even just seeing the darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's manifestation of ecstatic love for Krishna in the mood of viparlambabha, of separation, you can see this form and worship this form. So the point that Jayapataka Maharaj told me, I have a letter from him. He tells me exactly how to get to this temple, and you can see it online now. I pull the images up once in a while. They fill this image with rose water, and they float roses and flowers in the water of this, and that's, you know, filling this image. It's very beautiful to see, actually. But the point that Jayapataka Maharaj told me is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he manifested this pastime. He showed this particular form, this and did this to show that even though we might be so unqualified that our hearts are like stone, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's love for us can even melt stone. So I'm going to stop here. Thank you for your kind attention. Okay, it's time for prasadam. We're already a little over time. So I hope you guys enjoyed the nectar of a little bit of Krishna's pastimes. I'm not the best storyteller, but these wonderful pastimes are available to us. And this is the nectar that we're hankering for. This is really what will soothe our hearts and our minds. And gradually, as we advance in spiritual life, we will enter those pastimes. I'll leave you with one point, which is really unique. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur makes. He says that Krishna's pastimes are not like reading an ordinary story or a novel, because they are a manifestation of the internal energy, right, of Srimati Radharani's energy, the Ladini Shakti. So he said, when you hear Krishna's pastimes, we are actually entering Krishna's pastimes through the via media of our hearts, through that state of purified consciousness, from the via media of our heart. And when we do that, when we hear Krishna's pastimes, Krishna can perceive us entering his pastimes. So Krishna says, wow, Bhagavatananda is entering my pastimes. Mishra Prabhu is entering my pastimes. Bhakti and Rishi, Devi, Radhi, Radhika, they're entering my pastimes. After so long, they're here with me. So the more we hear these beautiful pastimes, the more Krishna reveals himself to us. And gradually, we'll enter into that eternal entourage, which is the purpose of this Hare Krishna movement. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We can talk over breakfast. It's already late. I've gone over 10 minutes. Thank you very much, everyone. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Nitai Gopriyam Anandi. Hari Hari Bol.